Chapter 36. Gone towards Russia that morning, and perhaps it was some of them who had done them this injury, and that if they would be satisfied with that, he would send after them to inquire into it. This seemed to appease them a little, and accordingly the governor sent after us, and gave us a particular account how the thing was, intimating withal, that if any in our caravan had done it, they should make their escape, but that whether we had done it or no, we should make all the haste forward that was possible, and that, in the meantime, he would keep them in play, as long as he could. This was very friendly in the governor. However, when it came to the caravan, there was nobody knew anything of the matter, and as for us that were guilty, we were least of all suspected. However, the captain of the caravan for the time took the hint that the governor gave us, and we traveled 2 days and two nights without any considerable stop, and then we lay at a village called Plothus. Nor did we make any long stop here, but hastened on towards Girona, another Muscovite colony, and where we expected we should be safe. But upon the second day's march from Plothus, by the clouds of dust behind us at a great distance, it was plain we were pursued. We had entered a vast desert, and had passed by a great lake called Shanksosar, when we perceived a large body of horse appear on the other side of the lake, to the north, we traveling west. We observed they went away west, as we did, but had supposed we would have taken that side of the lake, whereas we very happily took the south side, and in 2 days more they disappeared again. For they, believing we were still before them, pushed on till they came to the Yuta, a very great river, when it passes farther north, but when we came to it, we found it narrow and fordable. The third day they had either found their mistake, or had intelligence of us, and came pouring in upon us towards dusk. We had, to our great satisfaction, just pitched upon a convenient place for our camp. For as we had just entered upon a desert above 500 miles over, where we had no towns to lodge at, and, indeed, expected none but the city Girona, which we had, yet 2 days' march to. The desert, however, had some few woods in it on this side, and little rivers, which ran all into the great river Uta. It was in a narrow strait, between little but very thick woods, that we pitched our camp that night, expecting to be attacked before morning. As it was usual for the Mogul Tartars to go about in troops in that desert, so the caravans always fortify themselves every night against them, as against armies of robbers, and it was, therefore, no new thing to be pursued. But we had this night a most advantageous camp. For as we lay between two woods, with a little rivulet running just before our front, we could not be surrounded, or attacked any way but in our front or rear. We took care also, to make our front as strong as we could, by placing our packs, with the camels and horses, all in a line, on the inside of the river, and felling some trees in our rear. In this posture we encamped for the night, but the enemy was upon us, before we had finished. They did not come on like thieves, as we expected, but sent three messengers to us, to demand the men, to be delivered to them that had abused their priests, and burned their idol, that they might burn them with fire. And upon this, they said, they would go away, and do us no further harm, otherwise they would destroy us all. Our men looked very blank at this message, and began to stare at one another to see who looked with the most guilt in their faces. But nobody was the word, nobody did it. The leader of the caravan sent word he was well assured, that it was not done by any of our camp, that we were peaceful merchants, traveling on our business, that we had done no harm to them, or to anyone else, and that, therefore, they must look further for the enemies who had injured them, for we were not the people, so they desired them not to disturb us, for if they did we should defend ourselves. They were far from being satisfied with this for an answer, and a great crowd of them came running down in the morning, by break of day, to our camp. But seeing us so well posted, they durst come no farther than the brook in our front, where they stood in such number, as to terrify us very much. Indeed, some spoke of 10,000. Here they stood and looked at us a while, and then, setting up a great howl, let fly a crowd of arrows among us. But we were well enough sheltered under our baggage, and I do not remember that one of us was hurt. Some time after this, we saw them move a little to our right, and expected them on the rear. When a cunning fellow, a Cossack of Girona, calling to the leader of the caravan, said to him, "I will send all these people away to Sabilka." This was a city 4 or 5 days' journey at least to the right, and rather behind us. So he takes his bow and arrows, and getting on horseback, he rides away from our rear directly, as it were back to Nertsinske. After this he takes a great circuit about, and comes directly on the army of the Tartars, as if he had been sent express, to tell them a long story, that the people who had burned the Chamkai Thongu were gone to Sabilka, with a caravan of miscreants, as he called them, that is to say, Christians, and that they had resolved to burn the god Skalicer, belonging to the Tongases. As this fellow was himself a Tartar, and perfectly spoke their language, he counterfeited so well, that they all believed him, and away they drove in a violent hurry to Sabilka. In less than 3 hours they were entirely out of our sight, and we never heard any more of them, nor whether they went to Sabilka or no. So we passed away safely on to Girona, where there was a Russian garrison, and there we rested 5 days. From this city we had a frightful desert, which held us 23 days' march. We furnished ourselves with some tents here, for the better accommodating ourselves in the night, and the leader of the caravan procured 16 wagons of the country, for carrying our water or provisions, and these carriages were our defense every night round our little camp, so that had the Tartars appeared, unless they had been very numerous indeed, they would not have been able to hurt us. We may well be supposed to have wanted rest again after this long journey, for in this desert we neither saw house nor tree, and scarce a bush, though we saw abundance of the sable hunters, who are all Tartars of Mogul Tartary, of which this country is a part, and they frequently attack small caravans, but we saw no numbers of them together. After we had passed this desert we came into a country pretty well inhabited, that is to say, we found towns and castles, settled by the Tsar with garrisons of stationary soldiers, to protect the caravans and defend the country against the Tartars, who would otherwise make it very dangerous traveling, and His Tsarish Majesty has given such strict orders for the well guarding the caravans, that, if there are any Tartars heard of in the country, detachments of the garrison are always sent to see the travelers safe from station to station. Thus the governor of Odinskoy, whom I had an opportunity to make a visit to, by means of the Scots merchant, who was acquainted with him, offered us a guard of 50 men, if we thought there was any danger, to the next station. I thought, long before this, that as we came nearer to Europe we should find the country better inhabited, and the people more civilized. But I found myself mistaken in both. For we had, yet the nation of the Tongases to pass through, where we saw the same tokens of paganism and barbarity as before, only, as they were conquered by the Muscovites, they were not so dangerous, but for rudeness of manners and idolatry no people in the world ever went beyond them. They are all clothed in skins of beasts, and their houses are built of the same. You know not a man from a woman, neither by the ruggedness of their countenances nor their clothes. And in the winter, when the ground is covered with snow, they live underground in vaults, which have cavities going from one to another. If the Tartars had their Chamkai Thongu for a whole village or country, these had idols in every hut and every cave. This country, I reckon, was, from the desert I spoke of last, at least 400 miles, half of it being another desert, which took us up 12 days severe traveling, without house or tree, and we were obliged again, to carry our own provisions, as well water as bread. After we were out of this desert, and had traveled 2 days, we came to Janizay, a Muscovite city or station, on the great river Janizay, which, they told us there, parted Europe from Asia. All the country between the river Obi and the river Janazé is as entirely pagan, and the people as barbarous, as the remotest of the Tartars. I also found, which I observed to the Muscovite governors whom I had an opportunity to converse with, that the poor pagans are not much wiser, or nearer Christianity, for being under the Muscovite government, which they acknowledged, was true enough but that, as they said, was none of their business, that if the Tsar expected to convert a Siberian, Tongus, or Tartar subjects, it should be done by sending clergymen among them, not soldiers. And they added, with more sincerity than I expected, that it was not so much the concern of their monarch to make the people Christians, as to make them subjects. From this river to the Obi we crossed a wild uncultivated country, barren of people and good management, otherwise it is in itself a pleasant, fruitful, and agreeable country. What inhabitants we found in it are all pagans, except such as are sent among them from Russia, for this is the country I mean on both sides the river Obi, whither the Muscovite criminals that are not put to death are banished, and from whence it is next to impossible they should ever get away. I have nothing material to say of my particular affairs till I came to Tobolsk, the capital city of Siberia, where I continued some time on the following account. We had now been almost 7 months on our journey, and winter began to come on apace, whereupon my partner and I called a council about our particular affairs, in which we found it proper, as we were bound for England, to consider how to dispose of ourselves. They told us of sledges and reindeer, to carry us over the snow in the winter time, by which means, indeed, the Russians travel more in winter than they can in summer, as in these sledges they are able to run night and day. The snow, being frozen, is one universal covering to nature, by which the hills, vales, rivers, and lakes are all smooth and hard as a stone, and they run upon the surface, without any regard to what is underneath. But I had no occasion to urge a winter journey of this kind. I was bound to England, not to Moscow, and my route lay two ways. Either I must go on as the caravan went, till I came to Jaroslaw, and then go off west for Narva and the Gulf of Finland, and so on to Danzig, where I might possibly sell my China cargo to good advantage. Or I must leave the caravan at a little town on the Dwina, from whence I had but 6 days by water to Archangel, and from thence might be sure of shipping either to England, Holland, or Hamburg. Now, to go any one of these journeys in the winter would have been preposterous. For as to Danzig, the Baltic would have been frozen up, and I could not get passage. And to go by land in those countries was far less safe than among the Mogul Tartars. Likewise, as to Archangel in October, all the ships would be gone from thence, and even the merchants who dwell there in summer retire south to Moscow in the winter, when the ships are gone, so that I could have nothing but extremity of cold to encounter, with a scarcity of provisions, and must lie in an empty town all the winter. Therefore, upon the whole, I thought it much my better way, to let the caravan go, and make provision to winter where I was, at Tobolsk, in Siberia, in the latitude of about 60 degrees, where I was sure of three things, to wear out a cold winter with, viz. Plenty of provisions, such as the country afforded, a warm house, with fuel enough, and excellent company. I was now in quite a different climate from my beloved island, where I never felt cold, except when I had my ague. On the contrary, I had much to do to bear any clothes on my back, and never made any fire but without doors, which was necessary for dressing my food, and see. Now I had three good vests, with large robes or gowns over them, to hang down to the feet, and button close to the wrists, and all these lined with furs, to make them sufficiently warm. As to a warm house, I must confess I greatly dislike our way in England of making fires in every room of the house in open chimneys, which, when the fire is out, always keeps the air in the room cold as the climate. So I took an apartment in a good house in the town, and ordered a chimney, to be built like a furnace, in the center of six several rooms, like a stove, The funnel to carry the smoke went up one way, the door to come at the fire went in another, and all the rooms were kept equally warm, but no fire seen, just as they heat baths in England. By this means we had always the same climate in all the rooms, and an equal heat was preserved, and yet we saw no fire, nor were ever incommoded with smoke. The most wonderful thing of all was, that it should be possible to meet with good company here, in a country, so barbarous as this one of the most northerly parts of Europe. But this being the country, where the state criminals of Muscovy, as I observed before, are all banished, the city was full of Russian noblemen, gentlemen, soldiers, and courtiers. Here was the famous Prince Galitzin, the old German Robestisky, and several other persons of note, and some ladies. By means of my Scotch merchant, whom, nevertheless, I parted with here, I made an acquaintance with several of these gentlemen, and from these, in the long winter nights in which I stayed here, I received several very agreeable visits. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.